everyone, and welcome to Futures in Languages, a podcast showcasing stories from UCF's Modern Languages and Literatures Department alumni. I'm your host, Christina Torres, and today we'll be talking with Henry Hodge, who graduated with a BA in Spanish with a specialization in linguistics and cognitive studies, an undergraduate TEFL certificate, and they graduated in fall 2021. They've been up to a lot of really cool things since then, so we're so excited that they can join us today. Thank you so much for joining us, Henry.
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have all kinds of stories, and you have so many cool ones to share with our audience. So if we can just maybe start off with where you're from and how you found our programs.
Sure. Well, I'm local. I'm from Orlando, Florida, born and raised in Central Florida, but my mom's family is from Peru. My dad's family is from the States. So I've always kind of had this focus of trying to understand my own identity better, trying to connect better with my heritage and my roots. And I remember going to my grandparents' house every week, every Sunday. But when I was younger, there was kind of a disconnect. They don't speak a lot of English. They speak mostly Spanish. And I didn't really speak any Spanish at all at that point. And so it was always really important for me to focus on my Spanish classes, you know, like in high school and introduction Spanish classes and at UCF. And I think it was Susan Jefferson within the Modern Languages and Literatures Department who encouraged me to at least look into a Spanish minor, but eventually convinced me to do a Spanish major. Mm-hmm. And I've been hooked ever since. I've really enjoyed the program. I realized I kind of had a knack for language learning and language loving. And so Spanish came naturally for me. And then I picked up the TEFL certificate as well to kind of continue with that process, I guess.
So that's how you found us. And I'm sure we'll get back to some stories from your time in our department. But I'm eager for you to share with our listeners what you've been up to since graduating from your BA.
Sure. Wow. Yeah. I mean, I've been pretty busy. I have started my master's program at UCF as well. I'm currently working on my master's in Spanish, this time with a focus on peninsular literature, and also a separate master's program in TESOL. I worked on those for a little while locally and at UCF main campus, and I applied for the Fulbright Brazil English Teaching Assistantship. Mm-hmm. I was very fortunate, and I received that grant, and so I'm currently working in Brazil, teaching English at the Federal University in Bagé, Rio Grande do Sul, Brazil. I'm just 45 minutes away from the border with Uruguay, too. So it's a very interesting opportunity, a very unique opportunity to practice both my Spanish and Portuguese and do some traveling when I have a chance.
Awesome. If you could, because we are currently coming very close to the annual deadline for Fulbright applications for everyone. So our listeners might be curious to hear any thoughts or experiences that you had while applying to that could be helpful, encouraging for them to hear?
Yeah, I mean, to anybody who's interested in the Fulbright program, whether it's doing research or teaching English, it is a very competitive scholarship, as I'm sure you're already aware. But I think the most difficult part of the application process is asking yourself who you are and why it is that you are the perfect fit for this grant. And you really have to believe that you are the perfect fit, because I'm sure you are, right? And so asking yourself, what makes you so qualified? Don't be afraid to write a million drafts, and don't be afraid to get all of the input from all of the professors, all of the friends, because really, in that sense, having more voices to just take a look at what you've written and give feedback, it's really beneficial. It makes a big difference. I actually had a completely different essay written maybe like for the month before the application was due. And then that final week, I had my meeting with the Office of Prestigious Awards at UCF. And they weren't a huge fan with what I had written. So I reworked a lot in the 48 hours before the deadline was due. Don't be afraid to completely change things, take people's feedback, and just understand it's not personal. They're just trying to present the best version of yourself. That
I like what you said about being confident that you are, in fact, someone who can do this. And I think a lot of folks who might be considering the application sometimes hesitate a bit because they think, well, I don't know if I'm qualified. But what would you say to folks who maybe are in that feeling right now, this time of year?
Well, I think about it like this, like, I am going to try my hardest during the application process and list all of the extra work I've done outside of my classes and all of the ways that I'm passionate about what it is I'm applying for, why I'm the expert on my subject, and why I'm the right person to represent it. But also, if Fulbright decides that maybe I'm not the right person to represent that topic that year, there's always next year. There's always next year. And at that point, I'm more familiar with the process. I have a better idea of what I'd like to write. And so even thinking about it as kind of a trial run, entering your application, it's still a really rewarding and enriching process going through that whole process the first time around.
I like that you're mentioning calling it a learning experience and just an opportunity to imagine and to give it a shot. Because, you know, trying is free and you might miss some shots you take, but you absolutely miss all the ones you don't take, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
Now, you mentioned that right now you're in Brazil. Could you tell our listeners a bit more about your experiences in this ETA ship in Brazil and maybe what it's like for you on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. So, like I mentioned, I'm in a very unique position in Brazil. I'm maybe the most south you can be in Brazil before you hit Uruguay, really. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in the south of the south. Of course, Brazil is a very diverse country with each of its regions basically being its own country in a sense, has its own climate and very different dialects and slang and things like that. And so the culture in the south is a little bit more conservative. Right now we're in winter and this is a city where it actually gets very cold. It'll get 0 degrees Celsius or below 0 degrees Celsius. And so I've had to learn how to cut firewood and make fire. I bought winter clothes, which of course I didn't need to have when I was back in Florida. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in that sense, it was just a completely different experience. What my day-to-day looks like, we go ahead and start the second semester at the university I'm working at. I have a lot of activities planned. My week starts with Monday leading a creative writing workshop. Tuesday is my conversation club for basic learners. And then Wednesday is for intermediate advanced learners. Thursday, so I'm really excited about this. We're introducing it just this semester where we're alternating like the first and third Thursday of the month will just be open office hours. Students and people from the community can come talk about whatever they like to talk about, ask any lingering questions they might have. And then the second and fourth Thursday of the month, we'll be inviting guest speakers who are experts of their subjects, of their areas, to help widen our worldview and just share their expertise with us. So I'm really excited. We have a lot of fun things planned for this next semester.
I like that in these types of programs, you get a chance to do more than one semester. Can you talk a bit more about how you came into this schedule, maybe comparing this to your first semester?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, the first semester, it just wasn't simply like it wasn't really that well planned on my part anyway. And of course, the reason being I'm adjusting to living in a new country, speaking an additional language all the time. And so maybe the first month or 2 months in Brazil was really settling in, getting a sense of the community and just feeling more at home, I guess, feeling more comfortable. I'm really fortunate that at the university I'm working at, they've been accepting ETAs for maybe 14 years now. So some of my colleagues' universities are accepting ETAs for the first time or the second time. And so at my university, they already have that infrastructure in place where they have activities and they have a lot of materials from previous years, textbooks and games, and we have bean bags, which is really comfortable in the classroom. So I was really fortunate that there kind of was already that working infrastructure in place when I first arrived, which helped me settle in better. We had our mid-year seminar for Fulbright in Brasilia this year. Just came back from that maybe 2 weeks ago. And it helped reinvigorate me, excite me with new ideas to bring into the classroom, and helped me structure what I think will be a smoother semester for my students.
For our listeners who might not be familiar with the mid-year conferences for these types of exchange programs, the mid-year is when they gather all of your cohort that might be spread across a country, and they bring you all together for the purpose of sharing stories and meeting with each other and catching up with each other, and then doing teacher training, and they bring in guests to do additional teacher training. I remember that from my time as an ELF in Dhaka in Bangladesh. We did our mid-year in Nepal, and we actually went to the Nepalese regional conference, NELTA, the Nepalese English Language Teachers Association conference, in addition to that year's mid-conference. So it was a cool experience, and what you're describing is really what I felt too, is this reinvigorating feeling, and then you jump back into your host institution.
Well, one thing I want to add to is I was so surprised how different each country's program can be run too. I had an opportunity while I was still on vacation, and I had just come back from the mid-year enhancement seminar in Brasilia. Mm-hmm. And I was traveling with my partner, and we traveled down to the border with Uruguay, and I got a chance to meet up with the ETAs from Fulbright Uruguay as well. They were in Rivera. They had already had their mid-year enhancement seminar, but they were having a like professional development type of seminar meeting in the city. And I thought that was really interesting because it wasn't just like Fulbright Commission leading this. It was just the format was completely different. It was more professional development for language teachers, which is a really cool opportunity, but it seemed more unique to that country's program. So every country is so different, not just in language and culture, but just how the programs itself are run. I think it's interesting to see those little nuances.
For sure. And we do, when we talk to students, tell them each exchange experience is different. Right, just like each Fulbright experience is different, each English language fellowship is different, and each Peace Corps experience is very different, we tell them. But it's still helpful, I think, for folks who haven't done these programs to imagine what it could be through the stories of our alumni coming back.
With it's important to remember every Fulbrighter is different, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. Every Fulbrighter is different. And so even if somebody's listening to this and they think that they're not the right fit for whatever reason, they still have a unique perspective to offer, mm-hmm. unique life experiences.
Sure.
And so just don't devalue your own life experience, because it's something completely new to these students, something unique and special to offer.
Absolutely. I talk with my students who are often training to be TEFL TESOL teachers for the first time. I work in a lot of the undergrad TEFL certificate classes. And I tell them, again, exactly what you said, everyone's perspective is valuable as a teacher. And even if they've seen a teacher who is similar or different to you, your lens is something that is very useful for them to experience. We're all ultimately shining lights on those different perspectives that we bring. And it's all very valuable. Sometimes it takes courage to stand and be seen in these types of exchanges. And I do encourage everyone to, you know, take that courage to stand and to be seen and to be authentic to who you are and be a teacher in that way. You never know whose lives you're going to touch in that process.
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing a bit about your day-to-day in your ETA-ship in Brazil. Can you tell us a little bit more about your experiences in our programs? Because this is something, you're still with us. You're not gone from our department yet. You've hung around and you're doing your two masters in our programs. So could you share with us a bit about your experiences in the undergrad? And then we can maybe follow up with the grad.
Sure. I think Dr. Lopez, Dr. Humberto Lopez, mm-hmm. is one of the most recognizable faces of the department. Mm-hmm. He's been with the department for so long now. And he's also not just such a good instructor, but such a good person. He makes you feel so comfortable in his classes, and he's not afraid to joke around with you. Even if you were to maybe incorporate more English in your Spanish than you originally meant to, he's very willing to just joke with you and let it go, and it becomes a very fun learning experience. Mm-hmm. His native fluency 1 and 2 classes were extremely rewarding. I think just providing me the metalinguistic awareness from understanding loan words in Spanish and calques in Spanish, like calcos, I think it's calques in English.
Yeah, the loan translations.
Yes, yes. But just understanding like all of the different verb tenses and like Spanglish words or words that native speakers use to mean one thing, but maybe standard Spanish uses a different word to understand another thing, that was extremely rewarding and helped my Spanish significantly. And not just with my Spanish, but of course, like when I was teaching myself Portuguese, having those resources are extremely beneficial, or learning another language after you've gone through that process of language learning already, mm-hmm. understanding just kind of what to look for, I guess, what to focus on, where to start. I think his class in particular was a really good base to jump off of.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you were given access to the puzzle, right? Like picking apart the puzzle. And now that you've seen the pieces, you're like, oh, okay, this is cool. Let's play with this puzzle some.
Yes, yes. Like everything just clicked. And I was like, oh, okay, this is what I'm doing. Because, I mean, when you're trying to teach yourself a language where you're, maybe you've downloaded Duolingo and you've done a few activities. I mean,
I've got a 137-day streak now on French. I'm very, very excited about my Duolingo.
No, that is hard to maintain. And but for everybody who has Duolingo on their phone, maybe, and they're like, okay, well, I've finished my lesson for the day, whatever. Now what? What? Where do I go from here? How do I cement this knowledge? Mm-hmm. It can feel very aimless. And so having the access to the puzzle, having that, like, I don't know, bird's eye view of what's really happening, it makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I notice when you talk about this class and these experiences is fun. You talk about fun, right? And I think that's so nice for our listeners to hear, because often we hear all kinds of, you know, stressful things that people might feel as they learn a language, but I like to remind, there should be joy in learning, you know? There should be some fun. And kudos to, you know, not just the teachers who provide elements of fun, but also the learners who seek it out, right?
Definitely agree. And I think if you're not having fun, maybe that's not the language for you. And I think that's a good conversation to have with yourself, too. I've dabbled in a lot of different languages before deciding to pursue the ones that I pursued, Spanish and Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm never done learning. I'm working on Italian right now as well.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to teach myself Chinese, like Mandarin Chinese, or trying to teach myself Arabic, I had to understand some of my limits as well.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to learn those languages at some point in my life, but I recognize I'm going to cause more stress for myself if I try to be both teacher and student for these languages,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not going to have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to have a good time during the process, so I had to have those conversations and set those limits with myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge difference. It's been very fun.
That's great. And sometimes it's not a never, it's a not right now, you know, like just putting a pause on it for not right now. We'll put that on the shelf for the future. Yeah, as we continue to pursue the things that bring us joy. Now, you mentioned that you've studied Spanish and Portuguese. Would you mind sharing some, maybe a story of your experience with learning Portuguese in the department?
Sure, yeah. It's an interesting story of how I got to Portuguese in the first place, I guess. I was in high school and I was studying, I was doing my Spanish classes, I was doing my AP Spanish literature course in my final year, and we had a Brazilian exchange student maybe in my junior year of high school. And I really wanted to be his friend. I really wanted to talk to him more, but he didn't speak a lot of English. And I really naively assumed that Spanish and Portuguese were like the same thing at that point.
They're not.
I see you shaking your head. It really is. They're so, so different.
Yeah.
Of course, they have a lot of similarities. And Of course, we could talk about the history of languages, but I think the episode would be like 3 million hours
long. We could shelf that for maybe a future episode, yeah.
But it encouraged me to start seeking out language exchange partners online and looking for group chats and forums to practice language, to practice writing and reading, sending audio messages on WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. Brazilians and Latinos in general love WhatsApp so and much. Love audio messages.
Yes, love the audio messages, yes.
Absolutely. And that helps so much when you're training, listening and speaking. And so I studied that way for 4 years by myself. Mm-hmm. And I picked up a lot. I learned really quickly because I had that direct access with native speakers. So I was really fortunate to have that and make a lot of friends along the way. And then after studying for about 4 years, I think it was the summer before I graduated with my BA, I did the Middlebury language program, the summer language program in Middlebury, Vermont, the Middlebury College. For those unfamiliar, it's a language immersion program that's about 8 weeks long. You are at the university completing coursework, all in your target language, and you have to sign a language pledge. They're very well known for their language pledge, where you sign away your English, your any language besides your target language for the duration of the summer. And oh, it's quite tricky. It's really hard. And you'll see like their promotional videos and stuff. People will only be speaking in Chinese. And even after the scholarship or even after the program ends, they'll forget words in English or they'll forget words in their other languages. And so it's a really rewarding process and, of course, helped me grow so much in Portuguese. Mm-hmm. So I was fortunate to do that before I applied for Fulbright. But with the department, I work with Professor Evelyn Pegodaro. Mm-hmm. Of course, she is wonderful instructor.
Just a wonderful person, too.
Yeah. Wonderful person overall. She's from Sao Paulo, Brazil, but she speaks fluent Spanish. She graduated with a degree in Spanish from UCF as well. And so having that connection with Evelyn over the years has been extremely rewarding. I feel really lucky that I've gotten a chance to know her both as a mentor and as a friend. And yeah, just having that connection with her and with Dr. Sosa in the department, I was able to start offering Portuguese tutoring in the department. And I offer Spanish tutoring in the department as a GTA, but anyway, you guys are looking for a volunteer tutor. Like, I just love this language so much. I know you guys have students. I would love to help in any way possible. And I was able to become a tutor for Portuguese within the department. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I'm at with my relationship with Portuguese. Yeah.
That sounds like a really rewarding experience to not just develop your own language skills, but to then help others as they develop their language skills. It feels very full circle when you share it that way.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Very full circle. And I've had the opportunity to help heritage learners of Portuguese as well, which I'm a heritage learner of Spanish. Mm-hmm. So I just felt, I don't know the right word for this, but just like, I guess so much joy, just so fulfilled, mm-hmm. being able to fill those gaps. Yeah, it's definitely a full circle moment.
Yeah, and the opportunity to help others learn language to connect with their families, much in the same way that you were very excited to learn language to connect with your family, feels very full circle joy too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Great. So, I mean, you've already talked about how the program has prepared you for your life now. Your life now is, you know, helping others to pursue their own dreams and goals and find joy in language learning. Do you have maybe a standout recent story from your time in Brazil that you think our learners would enjoy hearing?
Because I've been here for 4-5 months already, and so I've had a lot of really unique experiences so far. I guess just this week I was working one-on-one with a student. It was during the normal conversation club hours, but there was just one student who arrived this week. It's our first week back from vacation as well. And we played GeoGuessr. I love GeoGuessr. Very fun.
No, I'm not familiar with GeoGuessr, so if you don't mind me inserting here, what is GeoGuessr?
Oh, sure. GeoGuessr is great. It used to be really popular maybe when I was finishing high school, like a little while ago. It's basically a game online, consists of three rounds, and it drops you in a random spot, like in Google Maps, essentially. And you can see 3D around you. You can click around, walk around, and you have to identify on a map on the screen where you are in the world, what city, what country. And the goal of the game is to get as close as possible to where you are, right? And so it has three rounds. You can see how close you get. And in order to help my student kind of identify where in the world are we, literally, what kind of differences are there culturally? Like, what kinds of things can you look for geographically that might give you hints? We talked about mountains and bays and rivers, tourists and different types of people, different vocabulary for clothes, language differences and everything. That was just a really fun activity for me personally, because it's so interactive and it's just very fun to play games during class, especially if we get to learn while we're playing games in class.
Of course, yeah, games are very educational when done in that way, right?
Exactly. And this student stood out to me so much because she's also not from the city. She's from another city in Brazil. She's from the northeast of Brazil, and we're all the way down in the south. She's quite far from home. And so we kind of already had that connection of both being far from home, but both being at the same university. And she is completing I think it's an internship with Disney in Orlando, starting in November of this year. So I come back to Orlando in December. So we'll both be in Orlando around the same time. And so I'm planning on meeting up with her back in Orlando to kind of give her a tour and show her around. I'm super excited. I'm super excited for that.
Such a special connection, especially in, you know, the times that I've been able to connect with folks that I've met during work abroad when they're back in the States, and I get to meet them here and hear how they're doing and just share a catch up with them. It just feels very nice. And how nice that you're able to do that pretty quickly after your Fulbright time too.
It's amazing. But it's so special the way that we can connect with people, one, internationally, but also being in our home country, connecting with international communities online. It makes a world of difference. I mentioned before, I've had language partners online at this point for the last 6 years. And having those connections online for the last 6 years, I had a really unique opportunity to meet these Brazilian people in their own cities while I was traveling throughout Brazil. And I think I've met maybe three language partners in person already. Even meeting one is such a special experience, like going from online friends to like, oh, you're a real person in real life. Like, so having that experience multiple times, it's so exciting every time.
Yeah. This is one of the things we talk about in this podcast, how really language learning just opens connections. And isn't that just the best, right?
Absolutely.
Just the best. So we have a new segment in our podcast. Well, new-ish. This is our second season with that segment. It's a segment that we like to call Ask Our Oprah. So today we've got a question for you from our correspondent, Miley. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it.
How has learning a language altered your perceptions of the function of creative works such as poetry and folk music?
It's a great question. I mean, anytime I get to talk about the function of language, I'm extremely happy. But specifically within creative works like poetry, folk music, I'm a huge lyrics person. Like when I'm listening to songs, of course, I love digital production and everything, and that's a whole other story. But I just think it's so special how people can connect these really big human emotions with like this creative flow, this creative like flowery language. And after learning Romance languages specifically, like in my classes at UCF, we talk a lot about word order and syntax. the function of a word, if it's a verb that becomes a noun or a noun that's become a verb, or those different types of transformations within language itself. Mm-hmm. It's been really rewarding for how I think about my native language, English, mm-hmm. and just playing with word order in English as well, or not being afraid to kind of take an untraditional route. Maybe a word is traditionally just a noun, and I've kind of created my own verb to express this big feeling that I have. Mm-hmm. I think it's really special understanding how words itself can change and how you can just be so flexible with language. I think a big topic that comes to mind when I think about this is prescriptivism versus descriptivism. Mm-hmm. Like taking language, prescriptivism being like taking language from textbooks, grammar textbooks, and these are the rules, these are the standards of language, and there's one right way to speak or use language. And descriptivism, completely turning that on its head and saying, this is how language is used. And as a good linguist, in quotation marks, a good linguist, my job is to describe how language is being used and understand why and how it's being used. I think that mindset is really rewarding in situations like creative writing, poetry, folk music, and music in general.
I hear you talking about just the creative depth of manipulating language and how maybe looking at poetry and folk music and all of this in various other languages just have really illustrated the deep creativity of the words. And maybe we can have all those layers of meaning come up in a song in a way that we hadn't thought about before. Am I hearing you right?
Absolutely. Yes. It's very special. Having all of those layers of one feeling just being encapsulated perfectly in one word, it's a really special feeling when that happens, or to hear somebody be so like masterful with their use of language. Mm-hmm. Love that. And other languages have other poetic depths and things. Like sometimes I feel like just the common way of speaking Brazilian Portuguese can be so poetic, even when it's not a poetic situation at all. And so I think it's interesting to kind of observe those differences in other languages too.
For sure, for sure. And this is something that I talk a lot with my husband now, as he's in the process of learning Spanish. And he'll say, oh, how would you say this? And I'm like, well, what is your intention behind? And that's when we have the conversation sometimes too. I'm like, oh, what is the intent? And then we go into, you know, and I'll go ahead and say, I'm not a trained Spanish teacher. I'm a trained English language teacher. But, you know, we have meta language with which we can discuss things as language trained folk, you know.
As we tend to have.
So we're coming up on our last question here, Henry, and it's a general one. But for anyone who is considering starting a language learning journey, and you've had several language journeys happen simultaneously, what advice would you offer someone who is interested in studying any of the languages that you've studied, or TESOL as a trained teacher? What's some advice you would give these people?
It's a wonderful question. I think it's important to live as much of your life in that language as possible. And that doesn't just have to be living in the country where that language is spoken. That can happen right away at home, finding musicians of genres that you like to listen to in your native language, finding musicians in your target language, and just downloading songs, finding playlists that people have already made. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. People have created a lot of playlists and flashcard decks already. So finding those resources that are already out there, living as much of your life in that language, but I kind of like living as much of your language. I kind of like that as well.
That's nice too.
Following accounts on social media, influencers from that country, or comedians from that country, or countries, I guess. And before you realize it, like, you'll find your favorite comedians, or you'll have your celebrity gossip from that country that maybe your friends back home wouldn't really know that much about, but your international friends know about. And then you have a new conversation piece too. So just living as much of your life in that language and having an open mind, of course. People are different, just point blank period. Mm-hmm. People are different. And so maybe if you are practicing your language with somebody who has a different set of opinions than you or different just cultural practices, being open to understanding where they're coming from and mm-hmm. understanding their intents, not just like what they said, like explicitly, but are they a good person? Like, are they trying to be a good person? Mm-hmm. Is this somebody I want to have in my life? Somebody I want to practice language with? I think helps you become more flexible and welcome these new friends and new connections in your life.
Mm-hmm. I hear you talking about the importance of contextualizing people as we meet them for language and how maybe because we have different experiences, different life experiences, different cultural experiences. Sometimes, you know, we might forget for a second that there's a whole context around that person and what they're choosing to say to you. But I have found too that the more we understand the context of where folks are coming from, the better we can understand their intent behind those statements.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, Henry, it's been such a pleasure to meet with you and talk with you today. I know that this might not be the only time we speak. I'm hopeful that we can have you back, you know, because you're still in our MA programs for Spanish and Peninsular Literature and also our MAT stall. And I can foresee a future episode where we come back and we talk about all the cool stuff that you do after those programs, too.
I look forward to it. I see that happening, too.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Henry. Have a great rest of your time in Brazil. Thank you for listening to this episode of Futures in Languages. I'd like to give a shout out to the Video Guy for our intro and outro music downloaded from freesound.org. I'm your host, Christina Torres, and our featured guest today is Henry Hodge. Tune in next time to hear more alumni stories from modern languages. For more information about our Portuguese, Spanish, our MA programs in Spanish and TESOL, and our other language programs in the Modern Languages Department, please visit our website at cah.ucf.edu/languages.